Hi, Mifi. This is Ellie Boa. Happy 2019. I hope you all have a good year. Thank you all for being my favourite place on the internet.
Time to gather up your links. All the things you thought were red. Couple things you thought stink. And you sort them all out. Like paper slips in your lap. It's time to lay it down.
Well, hey, welcome to another episode of the Metafilter Monthly Podcast. This is episode 149. We're recording it on the morning of Tuesday, February 5th. Keeping myself honest by baking the delay on actually getting this up into the intro. I am Josh Millard, a.k.a. Cortex.
And I'm Jessamine.
And here we are. We were... I'm off to a brilliant start, but
keep the energy up.
Well, so not featured on mic, almost like by definition, was like 15 minutes of Jess been having to wrestle with her computer stuff to get audio to come out. So we're kind of coming out of like the come down from like finally triumphing over that bullshit.
I don't know which audio webinar bullshit software is hijacking my nonsense, but yeah, it was a pain in the ass. So coming to you live from the laptop.
Webinars never did anything for the world.
Sometimes they keep me paid. I appreciate that.
Well, okay, yeah.
They keep me at home, and so I don't have to get on an airplane. Well, okay, I'm telling people I care about my carbon footprint, but really I'm just tired of traveling, honestly.
So in summary, webinars have changed the world for the better. And
Webinars are a land of contrasts.
Yes. But yes, you're well, I'm well. We were discussing that there is snow in our respective regions of the United States.
A lot of snow here, less snow here. Every now and again, the entire house here shakes because some huge glacier of snow and ice falls off my roof. And it's very exciting because, you know, I've lived here 10, almost 11 years, and I just freak out each time. Like, what the shit? Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I went down to Massachusetts to, you know, the big game, and and there was no snow on the ground, and it was unnerving. But it was windy and fucking cold, so that's good.
Good enough. As long as winter's, like, showing its face.
And our dumb Patriots won, and it was really fun to go read the fanfare thread after the fact. Yeah. Tom Brady needs to hang it up. That is my thesis.
I was pleased by how little it impacted me as someone who wasn't doing any Super Bowl stuff. I wasn't doing any not doing Super Bowl stuff.
You just had a fun day.
It just sort of went by, which was nice. Eyebrows watched the game and reported that it was very boring.
It was super exceptionally boring. Like, the Patriots are kind of good for lively football a lot of times, but it was boring. The ads were kind of boring. The food was great. Like, the reason we went down to Massachusetts is my sister really likes an occasion to just friggin' trash her kitchen and make a ton of food. And so us coming down to, like, nominally watch TV is as good an excuse as any. So I got to go and see my cat nieces and nephews, basically. And,
nice.
Yeah, just eat a lot of food and hang out. Jim and I went for a completely freezing walk beach adjacent because there's theoretically snowy owls down on the south coast of Mass.
Oh, nice.
But we didn't see any because we had to keep our eyes closed because the stinging sand flying through the air. You know, I was literally at one point just because Jim wears glasses, like holding onto his arm and just letting him lead me hopefully towards the car and just being like, oh, man. What have I gotten myself into? We didn't see any owls either.
Oh, well. But you got to walk it, you know.
Yeah,
that's the key thing, you know. Me and Angela tend to, like, frame stuff in terms of, like, yeah, but, you know, we got to walk it, you know. Try and get out there and move the legs every day.
Exactly. So let me talk about the number 149, which I think is hilarious.
Lay it on me.
Because on Wikipedia, there's a little one of those alerts that says, this article may contain indiscriminate, excessive, or irrelevant examples. Huh? Like, they're all examples. Like, what is an irrelevant example when you're talking about what a number is?
That's all we've got, Wikipedia.
It's prime in a number of different dumb ways, which you wouldn't necessarily think because it ends in a 9. There's some rep unit shit that I don't understand. it's a non-palindromic number. You might appreciate this, meaning that it's not a palindrome in any base.
Oh, nice.
From binary up to base 147, which is fairly cool. And then there's some other bullshit. And, you know, maybe these are irrelevant examples, but they seem fine. It's just, you know.
Yeah.
There's a 149 Medusa. It's an element temporarily called unquadenonium. yeah.
It's the digits are ascending series of squares, like 1 and 4 and 9.
See, that's cool, right? And that's not even in here as an irrelevant example.
Yeah, well, we should pad it out even more, make it like just really long form.
Yeah, well, I've been, you know, a Wikipedia nut this month because it's the one lib, one ref. Like, what if everybody added one citation to Wikipedia? We wouldn't need any citations anymore. And last year they paid me to kind of stand for it, and this year they are not paying me. Because they are not a good place to work as much as I enjoy actually noodling around Wikipedia. So this year I am not getting paid to do the same thing I was doing last year. And it's been fun.
Yeah,
adding more, you know, articles about African-American women. And yeah, it's a good time.
I just had an audio burp. So that was just an awkward silence.
I talk to Jim about this sometimes, right? Like sometimes we'll just be having a conversation and I'll say something and then he just kind of won't respond. And like, you know, he's just thinking or it made him think of something, but he just doesn't say anything. And I'm like, I really feel like your mic has dropped out. Like what? You're supposed to say something, like even if it's just,
exactly. Mm-hmm, well, and it's.
I am actually listening, not just like watching the birds. I do remember that we're in here together having a conversation.
Yeah, and it's that subtle cadence thing. Like, you know, an extra like 500 milliseconds makes a difference in how it feels like pause or just extended pause. But I'm having that. You know, the thing I've talked about previously, where every once in a while we're using this software, you'll get a little bit slow and robot-y and then like rubber band back to full speed.
A little bit slow and robot-y. Yeah.
You know, but for technology reasons, not personal reasons.
I mean both, really.
It was doing that right when you were putting a button on that sentence, I think. And so like waiting for it to catch up. I was like waiting for it to catch up. And then when it caught up on silence. And yeah, so.
It caught up on silence.
Technology, man. I like this software reasonably well.
We're using TriCast, by the way, if anybody.
But that one little thing continues to be a thing. And it might just be my shitty internet connection, which should not be shitty, but I feel like it's
a
little bit shitty.
Dude, who has a shitty internet connection? I do. You don't.
Well, but I think it's when I'm uploading my segment. Like, it does it like piecewise every 30 seconds.
You said it.
Segment, yes. we gotta get I Am Kim I Am back on the podcast sometime for 5 minutes to like lay out specifically the like phonetic nature of that particular bit of my
idiolect. Where that comes from. Because, you know, that's an idiolect pretty much. Like, I feel like that's you and, like, people from northern Minnesota.
Yeah, there's definitely some regional stuff to it that doesn't make any specific sense, as far as I know, to my linguistic context. So, yeah. And
right.
I don't know if it makes sense for someone in my family. I don't think my mom or my dad are egg people. But I don't know. I'll look into it sometime. Anyway. Let's talk about jobs.
Let's talk about jobs.
There's a very specific, exciting job thing in particular that I was happy to see show up because I was like, I should poke the Andes and tell one of them to post this. And then one of them just did already.
Hey.
All the jobs actually?
They look good.
Yeah. You know, yeah,
I mean,
sorry.
There's four jobs. They all look cool.
Yeah. So the one I want to mention specifically is – it's actually a couple of jobs posted by Annie McMillan, who's one of the two Andes who runs XOXO, which I've talked about before. And the other one is our own waxy wax pancake, Andy Bayo. They have started working on a rework of a project called Drip, which Kickstarter started a while back to sort of work in the same space as what Patreon does with sort of recurring micropayment support for artists. So Drake
great,
was
except
doing...
without Patreon being dicks.
Anyway, so Drip was kind of the same sort of thing. And then Kickstarter decided that, like, you know, they weren't – I think they just didn't really know specifically how they wanted to carry that forward. And they have good relationships with Andy and Andy. And
well,
so...
that was going to be my question because I know Andy used to be the Kickstarter guy, but I wasn't sure what his – how he was with them now.
Yeah. We actually had, like, real direct involvement. A while back, and he's still on good terms with them. He just like stopped working there and was working on stuff like EXO. So I think that is part of why they were like, okay, let's figure this out. Let's find a good home for this and let's let this have its own go at being what it's going to be. And so they're still working on developing that into what they want it to be. And as part of that, they're hiring a couple people. So if you are
these local or can they be work from anywhere?
They are okay with remote as well. Like they're in Portland, but they mentioned that remote hires in the U.S., are also totally doable. So if you're anywhere in the U.S. and you are potentially a senior web application developer or a project manager and you find any of the rambling I've done about XOXO over the years intriguing, you should definitely check this out.
Awesome. I like it. I like this little job that came from an Ask Me question. Basically, it's Quisp Lover who's – my phone is ringing and I am ignoring it. I was like, what? The noise. Basically, the friend's got a Blogger blog. Google doesn't index it quite right. I'm trying to figure out the Google Search Console. Can't. What's going on? Help. Maybe you could help.
Yeah.
So if you're someone who thinks you could log into a Google Search Console and help someone with the thing, try helping them with the thing.
And Crush has a job listing asking for some help drafting up a pattern for a woman's garment based on photographs of that. If that is in your skill set, jump on that.
And then our last job actually is Ellen? Hey, Eileen?
I don't know.
Ayala. Claire. Is looking just for somebody to eyeball a CV and give them some feedback on it. And, you know, this reminds me, I really have to put up my job, which is another, like, kind of – it's like a Quisp Lover level job where it's like I just have something – like I've got this book list, right, where I keep track of all the books I read. And at the end of the year, I do a little summary. Like I read this many of this kind of book and I read this many female authors and this many male authors. And it's fine, right? Like I enjoy it. But
yeah.
The book list thing, which was, of course, like written by like a, you know, random boyfriend 15 years ago, doesn't really lend itself to my book list report, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So like what I want to know is how many books I didn't finish last year and I have an unfinished category, but then it just gives me a list of every book I've ever not finished. Not which books I didn't finish last year.
Yeah.
So there's – and it's all PHP and I think it's pretty easy. But every – here's the problem, right? I get caught in this cycle where I'm like, it's PHP, right? I can figure it out. I should freaking learn it anyhow. And then I dive into the code and then I'm like, oh, I have to learn about this thing. And then I'm – all right. I have to go to work. Blah. And then – but I feel like I should be able to do it, but I'm watching myself not do it.
Yeah.
And after a point, I really need to just do it.
Yeah.
And get someone else to do it. And they could probably do it in an hour. But I also don't want like somebody to like PHP shame me, you know? Like this guy had no idea what he was doing. It's like, yes, that's why we split up 15 years ago. Please. So maybe I'll put that in my ad.
Yeah.
But I really should take care of it. I think about it. I think about it when I fall asleep. Oh, I should really. And then, yeah. Although I have been putting my reading list up on Twitter.
Yeah, I've been seeing that.
Yeah, it's been fun. It actually, here's what happens, right? Like, I read widely. I like science fiction. I read a lot of other stuff. I usually read nonfiction in the morning, fiction at night. But I need some kind of story at night so I can fall asleep. So... you know, certain like difficult books need not apply. And I don't like complicated, difficult books. And sometimes I finish a book and I'm not sure what the next book is. And I have like Dan Brown's latest book on my Kindle. But because I'm tweeting out my book list, I'm actually not sure I want to let my Twitter followers know that I am a Dan Brown reader. It's very embarrassing, right? Because I'm like the world's most supportive librarian. Like, read whatever you want. Doesn't matter, right? Yeah. And yet, so the good news is having this Dan Brown book on my Kindle means that I'll try and read almost anything else to avoid reading the Dan Brown book. So the other, like, fiction books that maybe I wasn't going to dive into, I've been diving into. It's remarkable. It never would have occurred to me this would be the pattern, but it's the pattern.
That's kind of fantastic.
Yeah, it's funny.
I mean, it's okay to read Dan Brown. It's like Dan Brown's kind of like the Guy Fieri of speculative fiction. You know, it's like, yes, okay, there's legitimate, profound criticisms in the context of higher work. On the other hand, whatever, it's schlocky fiction, and if you like it, you like it. That's fine.
Well, I mean, that's exactly it, right? I mean, it's like reading romance novels. Like, I have tons of friends who read romance novels, and I'm not even like, I'm just like, great. You found your thing.
Yeah.
The end. Like, I don't think any more about it. And yet, for me, I'm like, oh, it's like, I know he's a bad writer. But, like, everything I read
just
is
good
writing.
Let me have this beach reading.
Yeah, but I read too many, like, sentient plant sci-fi books, and I just need to read something where all the characters are human and there's just one goddamn storyline.
Yeah.
You know? Not like, and now here's a chapter about the sentient bamboo. It's like, God damn it!
Yep.
I don't care about the sentient bamboo's perspective.
Enough with this flora.
Yes. So, I want to talk about projects because I'm very excited about projects.
Let's do it. Tell me about the exciting projects.
Well, my favorite exciting project was Millman's Laser Cut Peacock Mandala, which we only found out about because there was a MetaTalk thread about, you know, like, what have you been up to, right? Like, you know, what have you been doing? What's something you're happy about or something you're proud of? I don't even remember. It was a nice thread of, like, whatever. And Millman's like, oh, I made this thing. And then you look at it and it's like this amazing stacked cut paper, glued, like, laser cut paper. And everybody was just like, whoa. And I was like, and I'm sure other people were like, put it on projects, dude. And so we put it on projects, and then it got posted to Metafilter. And it was just, the whole thing just made me really, by Lalex. And the whole thing just made me really happy. I liked the original thing. I liked the post. He talks to people about how to do it if people are sort of interested in it. And he's totally like self-effacing. Like, well, you know, I just thought I would. And then you look at this thing and it's incredible. And it's just all the extra pictures were really fun. Whole thing made me happy. It's on projects. It's cool. Go check it out.
Yeah, no, it's really fantastic. I that sort of work with laser stuff seems like really like a really good use of the tool and the sort of like a medium to work in. I follow a couple people on Instagram who do like similar kinds of stuff. And it's always just like, oh yeah, this like it would be a pain in the ass to do this by hand. Like people have certainly done similar things by hand, you know, for as long as people didn't have lasers. But I feel like the greater accessibility to doing the work with lasers is a really nice development. Like the fact that people can more practically accomplish this because it's still a tremendous amount of design work and a bunch of conception work, but there's no reason that like you holding an X-Acto knife in your hand needs to be a key part of producing those objects. So like I really love
seeing
this.
Day you would watch the X-Acto knife people do their stuff and you'd be like, whoa.
Yeah.
And now people are doing it using different tools.
Yeah. It's nice when the tools can sort of follow along with existing art concepts and improve the process for creating them. I really liked in a similarly bold, wide-scoped creation of original work. I liked Pronaic made a little font out of the Afterlife Wingdings on The Good Place.
I just see a row of boxes.
It's so we've talked about The Good Place TV show. I like it.
I like it. It took me a long time to come around to it. Like, I don't know what my deal is about getting to television late. But yes, agreed.
Yeah, we can't put it too. Like, we're up to speed now. But yeah,
I'm watching Mr. Robot now and reading fanfare threads from like 2015, 2016 to figure out what the hell's going on.
I need to get back to that. We basically watched the first season and then
that's where I am right now.
Lost track.
Well, and the first season, like, ends, right? And you're like, who is it behind the door? And then I went to check the Metafilter thread, and they're like, oh, my God, that four-second, whatever it's – or four-minute, what's it called, stinger, like when there's a little bit after the credits.
Oh.
So in the very end of the last episode of the first season, there's a four-minute bit.
I did not know
after
that. God
the last scene, and I wouldn't have known. Maybe you didn't know.
Yeah, no, I did not.
Whoa! Well, you have to go back and watch it now because it's actually a pretty important scene with the whole what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, at any rate, I'm sorry. Go on about The Good Life.
Just that they've got, you know, there's some
Good Place.
Yeah.
The Good Life.
The Good Wife with what's her face? Margolis. Yeah, no, it's just like they've got some like ciphery fonts in sort of alchemical angelic script littered around in the set dressing sometimes, and people got together and figured out what the script was, like, you know, capital and lowercase, you know, A through Z replacement cipher, and then Pronoic said, okay, well, I'm going to make a font out of it. So now there's a font that you can use to type in Afterlife Wingdings as the
well, and it's funny. I can see it in Firefox and I can't see it in Chrome. I am forced to use Chrome for the podcast recording tool that we use.
Yeah. His
but
example,
it is shitty.
Yeah. I feel like we're in like a new weird muddled shitty dark ages on like font support. It feels like for extended font support in browsers.
Yeah. The Unicode, I mean, or the emojis don't come quick enough.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's cool. An awesome project.
Let's see.
The other one that I really liked was another one that got bumped up to Metafilter by Lalex. The project itself is by DNG, and it's just talking about like sexist disparities in the numbers of winners in various awards.
Oh,
and
yes.
I saw some of this bouncing around on Twitter before I saw it here. But like, for instance, the earliest it can be when as many women as men have won Best Director at the Oscars because of the disparity currently in how many men have won versus how many women is 2111 or the year 2111, which, you know, not in our lifetime. Unless things dramatically change.
Like it's a great index, you know, it makes a point, you know, very, very efficiently with these numbers. And it's also one of those things where even then it's kind of like – it reminds me of like the Bechdel test in that like, you know, this is proposing such a specific – you know, the Bechdel test is interesting for what a low bar it's proposing. You know, how many movies fail to pass
the
Bechdel test?
Have two women talk about something that isn't a man for longer than a minute or whatever it is.
Yeah. And like that's such a low bar and yet so much stuff doesn't cover it. Whereas this is saying, okay, let's imagine for a moment that literally every Oscar winner for the next 50 years is a woman. Even
how
then,
long does
only
it take?
In 50 years would we be caught up. And that's like even if things balance out now, that's obviously not going to happen. So like it's that sort of like extremity that even at that, like the earliest possible in this impossible scenario, you know, would be decades or, you know, more. I thought that was really cool.
Yes.
I really
ridiculous
dig this EP from Bluebird Wine, who I've mentioned on a couple previous podcasts in the Metafilter Music Minute. Who's been posting good stuff, and she got an EP recorded and released. And it's
awesome.
I think five songs, maybe six songs of just nice, well-recorded, well-written folk stuff. So, yeah, definitely go check it out because it's nice. Good job,
cool.
Bluebird Wine.
I also like this Bug Report zine by Split Pea Soup, which is basically a free up on archive.org zine about frustrations and growing disillusionment of working in technology. And it's online. And if you want to go submit stuff for the second one, it's got some like Bezos must die bingo. Man, I saw fucking Bezos's dumb bald head wandering around somebody's box during the Super Bowl, and I was like, I thought we were having a nice time. That fucking guy, you know. I mean, it helps you remember everybody's a zillionaire. And
No, that's great. I did not get a chance to look at that before. So
yeah, it looks cool. It's wordy. It's illustrated. It looks cool. It's free. They have an Instagram. Yeah, you should check it out. It's cool.
Yeah. And there's a bunch of other great stuff on projects too. So just go look at projects. And if you're making stuff or doing stuff, go make a projects post. I like
yeah,
projects.
Yeah, please.
You should like projects
too. Don't be
too.
Shy. You know, you got something you're working on and it's more or less done. Put it on projects. Share it with everybody. Yeah. You get a lot of good feedback from people who are nice.
Just clicking over to Metafilter. Hey, let's talk about Metafilter.
Hey.
I was just clicking over the front page to dig through some of my stuff, and there's a brand new post about the debacle about Slack's new logo, and the title is
"Once
You Hear Swastika Made of Dicks, It's Kind of Over." And
wait, where I didn't
just a front page of Metafilter.
Send me a link.
Oh, right. I suppose that's a thing I could do. I could send you
Josh.
A link when we're discussing the Metafilter really. Anyway. I had seen that phrase before in when – like because this was like what, a couple weeks ago when Slack announced the logo change?
And I mean whatever, right? There's two ways to do logos, right? Like okay, everybody give us feedback on what we're thinking about or here it is. You didn't even know we were thinking about it. There was nothing wrong with the old one. Go. And this was more the second one.
Yep. Anyway, I don't really want to get into it. People,
I want to get into it. There's a swastika in the middle of it. Like it's the rule. It's the rule. If you show the logo to anybody and they say, "Well, there's kind of a swastika in the middle of it," you do something.
Yeah,
you just
throw it out and do something else.
The fucking like seriously, I cannot get over the "there's a swastika in the middle of it." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just – everything else, whatever. Slack doesn't work for me. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't matter if I like it or not. But really,
yeah,
there's a swastika in the middle of it. And that's a problem. And somebody should have caught it, but nobody did because there aren't enough Jews in everywhere. You know what I mean? Like it's a weird thing that highlights – And with me, the whole issue is like, you know, anti-Semitism is on the rise, you know, in the world and on the internet. And I told you, like, I work with Johnny Wallflower. I've kind of gotten off it in the last like week or so because it's really, you know, been poking me in my feels too much. But like, you know, I used to spend like 10 or 15 minutes reporting horrible anti-Semites on Twitter every morning and watching them get banned, which is gratifying. And yet, the fact that there was always new fuck the Jews anti-Semites on Twitter every morning, despite the fact that the other ones had gotten banned, is, you know, super shitty. And so given that, maybe not having a swastika in the middle of your logo would be a way to, you know, be a good – you know what I mean?
It does seem like a good idea to avoid that.
Because I think Slack really tries to do the right thing. You know what I mean? They're not like, we don't give a shit. They do give a shit. Or at least that's their kind of corporate posture. The people I know at Slack seem to give a shit. So I was very surprised. So I'm going to dive into that thread with gusto.
It should have a good comment count by the time we're done with the podcast.
Little surprised it took that long. And I don't know if you get this joke. This was the picture I was looking for.
Yes.
So you get that immediately when you look at it, or you know that?
I do. I get it immediately because I've been exposed enough to the Lost meme that, like, now I know whenever I see a slightly inscrutable thing in a, like, 2x2 matrix layout, it's probably a Lost joke. And then I look at it closer and, like, yep, that's what it is. It's a Lost joke.
We have not, because if we had, I would have gotten this joke. Joke earlier. Do you want to talk about it for 10 seconds?
I'll do the short version.
Please.
There's a webcomic called Control-Alt-Delete. It was one of a whole bevy of webcomics in the form of a couple of guys sit around talking about video games and having wacky hijinks. You know, whatever. It was basically constantly kind of sarcastic and caustic in tone. And then the guy did a comic about the story of one of the characters – losing her pregnancy, having a miscarriage, and the other character, you know, their SO, who's the main character, showing up at the hospital and being sort of devastated. And on the one hand, it's trying to do a little bit of storytelling about some earnest, dramatic thing. And, like, you know, you shouldn't make fun of someone for doing essentially a diary comic-ish thing about, you know, having a miscarriage. On the other hand, when the person's whole shtick is basically sarcastic assholery, and then they suddenly do an about-face and drop in contextless this
serious
thing.
And was this something that happened in somebody's real life, or was it just they decided to have a very special episode?
Yeah, I'm not clear on that either, so I'm not going to, like, speculate either way. I don't remember. It may have just been sort of a very special episode. But either way, it was so out of character that people kind of didn't take it seriously, and it ended up being widely mocked. And on the one hand, widely mocking someone's, you know, earnest strip about, you know, losing a baby, that's shitty. On the other hand, it's so hard to extend the benefit of the doubt, like, when you had the context for that this wasn't just, like, a bizarre misstep or attempting to use unearned earnestness. So, like, it's a weird clusterfuck where, like, nobody really looks good if you dig in on the Lost meme, because it's basically a whole bunch of people making fun of this thing, and this became, like, the most high-profile thing associated with this guy's webcomic work. But on the other hand, maybe his webcomic work was kind of assholey to begin with. So, like, and this is all, like, mid-2000s, I want to say.
Well,
like, maybe late 2000s.
Everybody knows, like, the dick internet person who winds up having a change of heart after it turns out somebody close to them is affected by the thing they used to make fun of. Whatever that thing is.
Yeah, people are complicated, and, you know, you don't just fit one role. So anyway, what happened is people started making jokes on literally the format of the comic. Like, there's a character standing by himself in the first frame, and then in the second frame, he's talking to someone at a slight perspective. So there's two figures standing, and then the third frame, he's talking to someone else in a different, slightly offset vertical perspective. And in the final frame, he's standing over the bed where his partner is laying down. And so you have this, like, one vertical line, two vertical lines, two vertical lines. One vertical and one horizontal line. That is, like, the visual infrastructure of the layout. And so everything that, like, all the Lost jokes are using those templates without any other semantic relationship whatsoever to the comic strip as a reference to it. And then, like, people posting it and then making jokes about, well, I'm at a loss, or, oh, it really loses something or whatnot to riff on the name Loss, and is this Loss? And that's the whole thing. It's very, like, the thing I will say, like, the most constructive positive thing I can say about it is that it is an extremely internet specific level of self-referential, ongoing referential humor. You can make up your mind about, like, the humor content and all of the backstory and whatnot, but, like, it is a very, very pure case of, like, an idea that exists only because of the internet, on the internet, perpetuated in a very internet way. So I find it interesting that way, and, like, the part of me that can laugh at people being sort of audaciously dickish with visual references, I can laugh at that sometime too, but it's complicated. It's hard to feel not, like, kind of shitty in the process of being like, oh, hey, we're doing that thing again where everything about this is kind of fucked up.
Right, where nothing is real and nobody cares.
Yeah, you know, it's like it's hard to divorce it from that, you know. It's one of those things, like, it's the joke that you realize that you don't know how to get your way out of explaining without kind of sounding like an asshole for enjoying it, that sort of thing.
Right. You probably shouldn't have been making it, but whatever.
Yeah. Like, someone who comes cold to is like, wait, so this is funny. Why? It's like, well, you have to understand the webcomic scene in the mid-2000s.
Right.
But anyway, that's what that is. So that was, that was
so
the 10-second version that took us, like, I talked for 5 minutes.
And so somebody readjusted the Slack new dumb logo to at least not have a swastika in it, but then it looks like the is this lost meme,
you know. So
I'm mad about the swastika, but again, it's just like, welcome to the internet, right? I'm mad about the swastika. They're not going to change it. Moving on. You know, I have all my icons on my sidebar arranged by color, and now I'm mad because it's in the wrong place.
You know, I haven't updated Slack yet, I don't think, because I still have the old logo treatment
icon. Well, I
updated
it on my computer, and it turns out I haven't updated it on my laptop, so I'm still looking at the friendly old logo. And realistically, you could hack it in 5 seconds to have the icon basically be.
Yeah.
It looks like it's like P peeing all over everything when it spins. It's terrible. Just terrible. Okay.
Well, okay.
Okay. Okay.
Anyway, now that we've talked for 10 fucking minutes about
all this stuff.
Okay. Well, you're an enabler. I really like this post on Metafilter about Bassoon Tracker, which is an open source JavaScript music tracker on the web.
Link. Send me a link. Link.
Oh, damn it. I made that a show note instead of a message.
Show note?
I can make secret show notes if I need them. And
Josh!
I don't ever do it. Like, I don't have any use for it. But there are two fields right next to each other.
This is why the title of the last episode wasn't "It's About Friendship." Or was that 2 months
this
ago?
This is the friendship. Yeah, I don't remember
it's
exactly.
It's a friendship episode.
Anyway, Bassoon Tracker is a piece of tracker software. And tracker software is a very specific kind of music production software that had its heyday in the 80s and early 90s.
What is it?
It came out of, I think, basically the Amiga demo scene.
People
making, like, you know.
I'm sorry I asked, aren't I?
Basically, it's a kind of
chiptune in it?
It's a piano roll style music maker, sort of related to how MIDI works, but it was designed to specifically use samples and audio processing, whereas MIDI just uses, like, just gets whatever MIDI hardware you have to play it. So MIDI sounds would often be, like, very, like, you know, dorky, bad, fake little trumpet sound, bad, fake
sure, I'm familiar sound. With MIDI sounds.
Yeah, you're familiar with the phenomenon of MIDI. Trackers were sort of an end run around how bad the audio quality of MIDI libraries were. So instead, you could use actual sampled audio, and it would use those samples and trigger them at different frequencies and pitches and rates and whatnot to create music.
So a bassoon tracker uses bassoon samples to be able to let you to create bassoons out of?
It has nothing to do with bassoons, it turns out. I think it's called bassoon tracker because trackers tend to have goofy names, and this one is goofily named bassoon tracker.
God damn it, I was all ready to talk about my neighbor who plays the oboe.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, you could use a bassoon sample, but there's no reason to.
This looks sweet as fuck. It looks like old... what was that weird old music player we all used to use?
Winamp?
Yes.
Yeah, which was an looks MP3 like, player that was styled like fast, like tracker style. I feel like the Winamp styling definitely harkened to the era of trackers.
Is that true?
Then for MP3s. Well, like aesthetically, I would say so. Like,
but like trackers came first is what you're telling
yeah,
me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, trackers started in the 80s. You know, there was – people talk about it a little bit in the thread actually. But the Amiga had – hardware that supported audio stuff that was way ahead of like general PC stuff back in the 80s. Like the Amiga was a really cool machine and it had this good audio processing software. So the tracker software for the Amiga used all four of like the hardware audio channels that could do much better playback than your, you know, shitty PC speaker could. And
ACB has mentioned in the thread that it's named after the effects that the music has on the time perception part of the brain, which is known as Shatner's bassoon.
Aha! There we go.
Come on, Josh. It's just reading.
Yeah, I've been distracted. anyway,
right,
it's really cool.
I'm totally into Shatner's bassoon now.
It's really cool. Wait. And if you don't know anything about trackers, it's a good jumping off point to learn about the history of this strange kind of music production stuff.
I don't understand why Shatner's bassoon redirects to a brass eye. Oh, I'm so confused.
I don't know either.
Wikipedia is so weird sometimes.
Yep.
All right. Sorry.
Anyway, it's neat. It's neat. It's a weird anachronism to kind of make that at this point because the whole impetus for trackers to exist went by the wayside, you know, 20 years ago. But it's still, you know, I mean, violins are old too. Fuck it. We still play music on them. So yay, bassoon tracker.
Oh, I see. It's like a made-up thing from a TV thing. So it's not a real thing.
Ah.
Whew. Thank God. All right. So we're going to talk probably about the best post contest a little bit later, but there was a best post contest, which did for me what basically I think it was supposed to do. I mean, I'm as engaged with the site as I'm going to be, so it didn't like hop up my engagement, but it did help me find some posts that I would not have otherwise seen. And specifically, different Metafilter users could all give awards for different topical stuff. Which is probably my favorite thing about it. And if I had been a little bit more higher functioning this month, I would have done my own award. Oh, RIP Movable Book Lady, by the way, who actually won one of my book awards back in the day of Best Post Contest. But Empress Calpigios had one about butts. It led me to this delightful post about hockey butts, which I guess are like a thing, right? Like if you're a hockey player, you have incredibly overdeveloped like glutes and quads, right?
Sure.
Like your legs and your ass. It also means, though, if you're a hockey player, it's very hard to find pants that fit because you have glutes and quads that are gigantic, and you've got kind of probably a normal size waist, right? And so women everywhere know this as a problem because women have more different shapes that are not accommodated by jeans, is my take. And so basically a fiendish thingy made this terrific post about hockey dudes who can't find pants that fit, as well as having these bizarrely overdeveloped butts, and then why they don't like just go to tailors, because the kind of everyman aesthetic is really important in hockey, and you have to kind of fit in the locker room. And so talking about that, and it just became a really interesting thread, and there's some cool photos of hockey butts.
Nice.
Yeah, so thank you, Empress Calipigios, for having that incentive thing. Thank you, A Fiendish Thingy, and thank you for all the people who gave hockey information. It was a really interesting thread to read. I liked it.
I am delighted just now seeing, I was glancing through the best post, one of the best posts, and this post from Nika Spark about a Camaro IROC Z fan page.
Oh my God.
Which
Josh!
Is exactly what it sounds like.
Josh!
It's amazing.
I wanted one of those cars more than anything. Like, were you of the age where this was a car you wanted, or
I was
do you
a
just
I was
appreciate
a,
it?
I was a little young for that, like, to be something that I was into, but I was never like a car person as a kid anyway. Like I there were a couple cars I liked as a kid, but I never really like paid attention. So I was aware of like the IROC Z because it had such a weird name. Like, what the fuck is an IROC Z? What does that mean?
And
like,
I still don't know.
But like, I've always been culturally aware of them as like, this is a very specific car that exists out there. People have these, whatever, these fucking Trans Ams or whatnot.
Right.
I'm probably like committing a venal sin by calling it a Trans Am.
They fought. But, they were like, you know, it's Coke Pepsi.
But yeah, so, and this page, this post is beautiful because it's just like, it is what you would expect if 20 years ago someone said, oh yeah, I've got an IROC Z fan page on the internet. Like, it's an old school, like, I like these cars and here's some stats about them. It's fantastic.
Right.
So, yes.
Well, and I didn't realize, you know, they didn't make that many of them relative to, you know, other cars. Well, and here's my thing, right? So I loved these cars and I wanted a car like this, some kind of Camaro or some crazy shit. And my father was just like, no. Like, and not like he was going to buy me a car, but I wasn't even allowed to think about having one. You know what I mean? It was just how I grew up. And he was like, no, no, no. It's a phase. You'll grow out of it.
Yeah.
And I was like, never. I'm going to have this feathered hair forever, and I am going to drive this car. And, you know, didn't. But for my last year of high school, I actually worked for an auto auction. Where the whole job was you showed up crack of dawn on Saturday, and what you did was you got into these cars and you drove them through – I've probably mentioned this before, but you drove them through the garage and all of these auto dealers would bid on them and they'd crawl all over the car and ask you if the air conditioning worked. And I was 17, right? So I had driven two cars in my life basically. And then in the auto auction for this one crazy summer, I got to drive – every car, including the IROC Zs and the Camaros and the Porsches and the Firebirds. And one of the things that I found out was that I am short and I can't drive a car where you sit on the ground because I can't see out of it.
Yeah.
Like, I can drive it kind of lying down as if I were manipulating something in a hospital bed, but I basically can't drive one of those cars and see.
Yeah.
So my love affair with them ended. I wound up driving like a Opel Manta, which was actually a pretty cool sporty car as my first car because somebody was selling it up the road, but I sort of got over it. And then when I met Jim, you know, 10 or 11 years ago, he had a Camaro briefly when he was a kid because he wanted one and his parents were less shitty. And I was like, ah, And it's just one of those dipshit things we share from our, you know, age-adjacent childhoods.
Oh, that's fantastic.
The end.
I also liked this post about recursive goofery, the Drost effect post that
I don't
Zamboni
even know what
posted.
This is, but it just sounds like it's totally up your alley.
Well, the text of it, like a Redditor posted a picture of their mother holding a painting, someone else posted a picture of themselves holding
step.
A painting of the first picture, and so on and so on and so on. It's fantastic. It's just like
so
it's
like
a whole bunch of people saying, okay, I can
family,
do this too.
Only it goes all the way down.
I've never seen the
Modern Family. Modern Family, like whatever. Yeah. Like there's a little intro where something happens and then they capture that scene and that scene becomes part of the painting that the people are holding.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, pretty much not very complicated. Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, it's delightful. It's just people being goofy, fun, creative people on the internet.
Well, and it's like when Reddit is good. You know, like where everybody's kind of on team nerd doing something where everybody can just be supportive and no one is a dick.
Yeah.
You know, I love that kind of thing. I should point out my post because I liked it. My sister basically sent me a thing on Twitter, which had to do with no, I sent her a thing because I subscribed to some like CDC newsletter or something, and it talked about the dangers of hedgehog snuggling. And like clearly that headline is intended to get traction, right? It's not – you wouldn't call it snuggling a hedgehog probably if you were just – but whatever. Don't get near your hedgehog. They got disease, right? Don't put it in your mouth or whatever. And so I sent that to my sister, and then she wrote me back and she was like, oh, I thought you were going to talk about that I shouldn't be snuggling my wombat. And she sent me a link to like another animal thing you can't snuggle because I think wombats are just foul-tempered and have claws. But then I just started Googling, and there's a whole bunch of stuff you can't snuggle. Backyard chickens, your cat with a rash, naked blind baby squirrels, etc. So I just made a goofy, but it turned into like, again, like another one of those kind of fun threads where everybody's just playing grab ass and it's funny.
No, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
I liked this post from Duffel, if I can paste successfully, because I just had this moment of like, ah, those fucking things. I think that's more or less what my comment was in the thread too. Weeples. Tiny little pom-pom things with like feet and faces, and they were used as like basically the bait for doing magazine sales and other fundraiser shit in
like
elementary
school.
Yeah, they had
like – they had stickers. Like you could – they their feet were stickers.
Yeah.
And so you could stick them on a thing, although I never knew what they were called.
Yeah. Well, apparently they were called a couple different things. People mentioned some other names in the threads, but God damn, it was like a shot out of the blue. Like, oh, I remember this whole very stupid thing I got caught up in because I was a dumb kid, and it's easy to insensitize kids with sort of dark marketing patterns. And
you know, I actually had to look someone in the face when she said her daughter was selling Girl Scout cookies and if I wanted any, and I just did that thing where you just hold the conversation and you don't say anything for just long enough so that you don't have to say no, but the answer is clearly no. Jim actually got worked by a Girl Scout who came to his door and he can't say no, and now he has cookies, which I guess doesn't sound like it's the moral it should be, but the whole thing irritates me, right?
Yeah.
Like they're too – I love the Girl Scouts. The cookies are too expensive. I don't feel like it sends a good message. I'm aware this is mostly only me, but I do think I'm right. Ugh.
It would be great for there to be a alternate thing that didn't feel like it was halfway to being an MLM using child labor.
Well,
as a way to,
right?
You know.
The only reason it makes money is because the kids work for fucking free.
Yep. And the cookies are fine, but they're also like, you know, they could be cheaper if the goal was just to make cookies as inexpensively as you could. But it's a fun – yeah. I have a couple friends who – are like Girl Scout people. So like that cleanly takes me out of like the concern of making the call in the moment at like, you know, roadside stuff. I can just be like, nope, I already gave it the office.
Wait, so you're saying you bought cookies from them?
Well, yeah, but it's a very direct support thing. Like, you know, it's a good friend who like is actively involved in like troop management and,
yeah,
you know, so like we're like, yeah, every year it comes around. Yeah. We get a couple boxes.
But then we just like would be do like, it like here's directly a 20, like that. And that's don't it. Make me do cookie things.
Gosh, what else is there?
I very much enjoyed only because, you know, Super Bowl weekend, right? And like I'm from Massachusetts, so, you know, I have feelings about it. But I also have – I don't know if you saw, but Horace Rumpole, a.k.a. John Overholt, was just on Twitter all day during the Super Bowl talking about traumatic brain injury,
which I thought
was a bold move and I respected very much. You know, because he's got like a lot of people pay attention to him, you know, and he's just like not watching it. Totally concerned. Here's a bunch of things you need to know about head injuries. And I was like, good on you. So this was a post from before Super Bowl. Basically, like Yahoo Sports did a thing about this kid who did a science fair project about proving that Tom Brady is a cheater, which, of course, is a theme that goes through football, right? Like Patriots, you think they're so good, but that's just because Tom Brady cheats. Well, but everybody cheats. Well, but do they? And blah, 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 blah. And of course, like this kid's just got this huge shit-eating grin on his face. And then, you know, a whole bunch of people show up in the thread to be like, well, actually, that's actually not what that science project proves. And then other people are like, rah, Patriots. At any rate, I just enjoy those because I just don't care. Like, whatever. If you ask me, I have an opinion, but I don't have an opinion enough to argue with anybody who has a contrary opinion. It's just like, you know, what's your favorite color? Orange. I like green. Great. You know, the end, right?
Yep.
So it was – it's, but it's fun to watch people who have different levels of opinions on the opinion meter grapple with that. And so this thread had a little bit of that. Tom Brady needs to hang it up. That's my only opinion I will argue about.
All right. Fuck the pets. I liked Joey Michaels made a post about this Tumblr meme that grew into an actual sound recording, which is Jolene, the
Eldritch Jolene, basically. Started. Yes. Yeah.
Someone named Ellie Jelly ended up recording what had started as just sort of like goofing lyrics on Tumblr, and it's fantastic. It's what it sounds. It's like a Lovecraftian horror take on Jolene, and it led
you
to a bunch of riffing.
You say I took
the
name
and,
in vain. Your voice is soft like summer rain. She tied you to her kitchen chair with flaming locks of auburn hair. Oh, my God. It's good. And then there's people riffing in the
– yeah.
Oh, that's nice. I like it.
Yeah, it's nice. So it's just a good little bit of internet, and I enjoyed it a great deal.
Speaking of, Vermont was on the internet briefly, which does sometimes happen. And Lubu Jackson did a post about Front Porch Forum, which is essentially Vermont's answer to Nextdoor. Well, it is. Like, it's a different thing, right? Like, it's a moderated email list. I mean, Andrew Liptak, who I vaguely know, who wrote an article about it. I feel like there's an art, isn't it? Oh, that's weird. Oh, yeah. Who wrote the article about it for The Verge is actually kind of a neighbor. Like he lives a couple towns over and I know him because he's also into like sci-fi books. And he kind of writes about, you know, the title is How a Vermont Social Network Became a Model for Online Communities, which you would think would be something, you know, Metafilter people would care about. But it is a little weird because like it's not a social network. It's a fucking email list and it's not even an email list. It's an email list that you can only get in digest form. You know what I mean? So, like, you email to the central location, and then once a day, maybe more, they email out a list of the emails all in one format. So the good news is for people for whom interacting online is actually pretty complicated, you can just totally do it with Front Porch Forum, and they moderate the crap out of everything. Well, I mean, this is the argument and the threat, right? Do they moderate a lot or do they moderate a little? I haven't noticed ours being moderated at all, but we don't really talk about shit. You know what I mean? It's mostly like, I've got Christmas trees. I've got goats. My goats eat Christmas trees. Hooray. Like, it's just very, you know, small towny kind of thing. But so it was just interesting because it kind of got the Vermonters out in the thread. And, you know, I knew most of them, but I didn't know all of them. And so it was just neat to see everybody. Also, I applied for a job there and I didn't get them. So fuck those guys.
That's the spirit.
I was like, nobody knows more about moderating online communities than me in the state. period. But I think maybe I was overqualified.
Yeah, that could be an issue.
Bad attitude.
Yeah, it could be something where the – yeah. It's,
I mean, that wasn't my whole cover letter, but
– yeah. Might be more than they were looking for. I'll go first. I like this post that many people who listen to it will not like particularly, but that's the way experimental music goes. It's a post by Mandolin Conspiracy about a bunch of compositions by a guy named Niels Lein-Lokegaard? Danish. I don't know if I'm getting the pronunciation right. Anyway, it's unusual stuff. It's like sort of like non-traditional experimental music using a whole bunch of a given instrument to sort of explore the sonic capacity of that instrument. Music for 8 recorders is probably the best way for anyone who's not going to be into this to immediately decide they're not into this, because you take the joy of experimental music and combine it with the joy of listening to people play the recorder.
I
really liked it. I thought it was really interesting, and it's worth giving a listen to if you don't mind some weird experimental music.
I do.
And yeah.
But I like Mandolin Conspiracy, and I trust him, so maybe?
Yeah.
I got one more. Yeah, one more.
Do it.
Basically, this was posted before the last podcast, but I didn't see it because I didn't see it. So essentially, Blair Braverman has just a great Twitter where she talks about dog sled racing. She is a dog sled racer. She's been in the Iditarod. She got a great Twitter. She's a nice lady. Everything's cool. And she has a Twitter thread, which is the topic of KAT's post, which is just introducing you to her dogs in that kind of we rate dogs sort of way, right? Like, here's all the dogs. Here's a funny story about each dog. And it's really, if you like dogs at all, it's cute. But I know Braverman because Braverman's Twitter in the end of last year, she basically takes a bunch of mail or will take a bunch of mail on a dog sled from wherever she is to Anchorage. And she'll put like little stamps on it, and then you have dog sled mail. I think you and I talked about this, but I don't think we talked about it in the podcast.
I don't think we did, but I got.
So basically, you have to send your shit to her before like the first week of December, and then she'll drive it down to Anchorage and put it in the mail, and so then it'll get to your people by Christmas. And so I sent out 4 letters, one to you, one to my sister, I forget the other, one to Jim, and I think one to my cousin? I don't even remember. But yeah, you got one, and yes. So I was really cool, happy about that. And then I got one from a different me fight, Needle Girl, and it was just such a treat because I was like, oh shit, like I'm running out the door, but I really want to do this. And so it was like, you know, it was just basically a postcard, right? But it was just a really cool thing. And so you can talk about, you know, it was just a cool envelope, right?
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. I have a random Metafilter story actually.
Great.
That I'm delighted by. So I've been taking a stained glass class the last few weeks.
I have been enjoying the pictures of that. That looks like it's really been kind of fun and challenging, yeah?
Yeah. No, yeah. I've been enjoying it more than I necessarily expected I would. Like, I thought it would be interesting, but, like, I'm really digging it. So it might be something I try and keep doing beyond just the class. But it's like a local glass studio. There's a woman who runs it who just teaches out of their sort of converted shed out back of their house that they turned into a studio space. Her and her husband, he does primarily ceramics. She does stained glass. And like week 5, like, you know, this weekend we're getting around to the tail end of the class and work finally sort of came up in some capacity. I think a schedule thing. I mentioned that I needed to work and I was like, oh yeah, well I got it. Yeah, it's work. I run this site called Metafilter. She's like, oh, yeah, I know Metafilter. I was like, oh, yeah. Well, And she's like, wait, so you work there? It's like, yeah. It's like, yeah, well, I mean, I run the place. I actually own it these days. She's
right,
like, wait, you
Cortex.
Fucking own Metafilter? Well, and Cortex never came up exactly, but like,
why
you know,
would
she
it,
and her
right?
husband have both. Yeah, and she and her husband have both been like members for a very long time, it sounds like probably early 2000s. I don't know their usernames at this point. Like, it's the sort of thing that I could go searching for, but I kind of like, even if like I establish a Metafilter connection with someone, I'd rather they say, oh, by the way, this is me, rather than be like, oh, I could use the admin interface. But yeah, we ended up talking about Metafilter a bunch, and like, it was just like this super weird small world thing.
On right, because like, someone lives three blocks from me, and
yeah. So this,
well, and
this
I'd be class, a little surprised if they knew Metafilter at all, they wouldn't have looked at that shape and been like, oh, hi, Cortex.
Well, I mean, I don't know that they're super
so
involved, and I don't
thing.
Know that, I don't know that they're like following like me doing stuff on
mod
Metafilter,
level
so
stuff.
Much as
yeah.
just, they have a long time association with the site. So I was telling her, okay, well, there's this thing on the site, and telling her about the Kate Bush challenge, which I'll get back to. And when we get to the Metafilter music minute, yeah, it was just kind of a nice moment, like, oh, hey, this is a total Metafilter small world moment, like that only came to bear like right at the tail end of this class of this like intensive creative thing. So it was a nice sort of like random bolt out of the blue thing.
I like it.
I feel alive when I stand next to you.
That may be it for me on Metafilter proper.
Yeah, let's talk about Ask Metafilter.
I spent a lot of time on Ask Metafilter.
I hear that.
Well.
It's been going around the rumor mill. This Jasmine lady likes the Ask Metafilter.
All right, so
I don't know where I'm going with this.
They kind of all lump into different kind of categories, right? Here's two that I call, like, help me science. So one of them is about deer, right? They totally, like, you know, cross the highway and are complicated. And so this is Pigtail Orchestra trying to figure out what configuration of, like, your speed and, like, multiple cars driving down the road would keep you from hitting a deer. And, you know, it's kind of mathy, but you can't really figure it out. But it's always interesting. I mean, it's one of those, like, kind of Microsoft job hiring questions from the 90s, right? Where you really just want to know how someone would go about dealing with that question. There's not, like, really an answer. And I lump it along with this question from The Truth Is Just a Lie, about do rockets have the most fire? Which is essentially a question from their 3-year-old.
That's a very good 3-year-old sort of question.
Yeah, and trying to figure out if there are things that have the most fire, like firestorms or a ship explosion or like a volcano. And like Devil's Advocate went at it with some pretty serious math, as did a couple other people, Wobbuffet? I don't know what that is. And a couple others. And I just enjoyed it because, you know, I like watching people be mathy about things that are not particularly mathy.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. No, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I like the question mentions not wanting to introduce, like, the concept of, like, nuclear warfare yet, which I figure if you are ruling out the sun as not being fire, then you can safely sidestep nuclear bombs too, since the sun is basically a gigantic nuclear explosion. So yes, you've got an immediate out there.
Whoa.
Yeah. No, that's great. Those are both great. I'm delighted by both of those.
Yeah. Another one I enjoyed, a couple about people's looks. So one of them is this considerate dude, a.k.a. benevolent actor, being like, look, I have one of those slightly fashy haircuts. I am bald. I have this beard. I don't want to look like a Nazi. What do I do so that when I'm walking around, people don't think I'm just kind of like a generic racist? And unfortunately, the pictures aren't up anymore. But like, he's a, you know, kind of normal looking dude, but has one of those beards that if he were wearing kind of the Nazi outfit would you know, potentially look Nazi-ish. Yeah. And so people, the thread's really interesting because it's a lot of people giving him like advice, like, hey, wear a rainbow bracelet, or, you know, some of it's just dude walking around at night advice. But some of it is also just like, here's some other things you could do.
Yeah, you can do some fashion counter programming to be more explicitly not the thing than the thing you're worried people will like vaguely think maybe you are being.
Yeah, you know, and other people are like, you're overthinking this. And other people are like, nah, you can't really overthink this enough. You know, that was actually one of the confusing things about the Super Bowl is, you know, the Jets have this kind of like blue and yellow color scheme. And so their entire sideline is all guys in like chinos and these blue shirts. And it just looked like opening day at fucking Best Buy. Which was like a hot take I didn't see anybody else making on the internet, but I stayed off Twitter for the game because I just – my sister like is kind of like on her phone and watching TV at the same time, and like I don't mind it if she's giving us little like here's the hot jokes from Twitter, but I do kind of mind it when I feel like she's just checked out and she's like on her internet and not really hanging out with us.
Yeah.
I mean, especially because Jim a lot of times is kind of like a nonstop chatterbox, and I'm like, dude, I'm trying to hear what Harrison Ford said to his dog. But yeah, these fucking Best Buy guys. But at any rate, so that was question number one. How do I not look like a Nazi? And then another question, interestingly, about appearance is it's an interesting by Calcetine Por Favor, user name I don't really know. But basically, I applied to an internship and didn't get it. And when they told me why I didn't get it, they said the position was being offered to a person of color. Actually, I am Hispanic, but also white, which, you know, as people who understand categorizing is like, that's a thing you can be. And I don't know if I should, this is the user again, I don't know if I should say anything to the hiring people or if I should deal with this differently in the future. And they're exceptionally like, look, I'm not mad. That's totally cool that they want to do what they want to do. But I am wondering if I'm sort of not playing this right. And it's a really interesting thread. Not a lot of comments. But like, you know, a couple of people who are like, that HR person should never have said that to you. Like, that's totally against the rules. But other people talking about how to kind of walk that line between being sort of marked as Caucasian, but also being part of, you know, diversity category, for lack of a better word. But, you know, it's like a lot of like invisible disability type stuff. Like how much should you mention it if it might help you in a situation, but how much is mentioning it not your job? At any rate, interesting thread. I liked reading it, and I was happy they asked it. And also, I felt like they asked it in a really sort of empathetic and considerate, like, rah, I didn't get this job and fuck it. You know, like, just very like, look, I totally get why they did what they did, but I'm wondering if I should do something different. And so it's a thread that very easily could have been a very different thread with, you know, different and or worse wording from the person asking the question. So I was also happy about that.
Calcetín turns out to be Spanish for sock. So, it's a solid
I guess I should have figured that out, right? That's awesome.
I mean, I wouldn't have known offhand. So,
sock, thank you.
This came up in MetaTalk, and so I'll just mention it here too, but this Ask MetaFilter question.
I was so confused by this question. Please go on.
La Lunamel? That's right. Yes, which is Spanish for sock.
Which is Spanish for the moon called Mel.
Yes. Let's just say, hey, I like eggs and toast for breakfast. I want to mix it up. Give me some more ways to sort of do this so I'm not just always making the same eggs and toast.
Well, and I couldn't figure out if this was looking for like different. For whatever reason, I looked at this thread and got confused by it. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, are they just asking for breakfast food? Because kanji has no eggs. So what? Ah. At any rate, go on, please.
Yes. That was my take on it. It's like, give me some other breakfast ideas. I like this, but just making this again is not great. Give me some other breakfast options as well. You know, not so much with the meat. Easy to make.
Sure.
You know, whether it's eggs or not. Yeah, it's just like it's. I always like sort of recipe brainstorming threads when I see them because, like, oh, yeah, oh, there's a bunch of food that I don't think about, like I don't know about, or, you know. Just,
well,
like,
and especially people who come from other food traditions. I mean, it is one of the things people say about sort of American food traditions is not only do we eat too much, but we don't eat very inventively. And a lot of the stuff we eat is very kind of, you know, meat and dairy heavy. Which, you know, it's fine if that's what you like, but there's a lot of other options, but we just don't think about it because it's not our food tradition.
In a related question, there's also a question from Amika Mentis, saying what would happen if you ate a handful of jumping beans? Which probably, I guess you just shouldn't.
Did they figure anything out?
I'm not sure really. I think the answer is you would probably feel gross if you think about it and that's about it.
Like, right, I'm not sure there was anything else to take from it. The whole deal with the jumping bean is there's just a little bug in it.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, what I learned from this thread was some information about gross stuff. That's all. But it was interesting. It was an interesting thread, even though it didn't really produce much of any exciting answer. I think the answer was, probably not. But,
gross stuff.
Also, because I always enjoy when this happens, there is a belated follow-up from an asker.
The cat? Is it about the cat?
No, this is
It's not about the cat that got found?
No, but you can
the missing cat?
This is much less exciting. You've completely made this. Like, this is a reach in the beginning to be worth mentioning, but
sorry, Josh.
Someone wanted to put Ubuntu on their crappy laptop, and they eventually succeeded in getting something.
Dude, I think it's harder to put Ubuntu on your crappy laptop than it is to find your missing cat.
Maybe, yeah. Anyway, they pull it off. So good job. I'm guessing Blank Frank, but it's Blunk Frunk.
Oh, with the eyes, with it once, I mean?
Yeah. Well, no, it's just like no vowels. Could be Blink Frink. Could be Blank Frunk. Could be Blunk Frank.
Which is Spanish for sock Frank.
Yes, yes. what else you got on Ask?
Well, I liked this thread. I thought I faved it because there was a comment I was looking at, but scanning it again, I can't find it. Basically, hey, I live in an apartment complex and they're installing keyless entry for each unit, which basically means there's a centralized computer, which is going to let me sort of in and out. There's going to be a phone app that you can use for unlocking the door. This is Rhiannon Stone. I don't really feel good about this, but I'm wondering, is it me? Like, you know, I don't feel good about this. I would like some anecdote or real information to convince me either it's not a problem or it really is a problem and I'm not really looking for this is just the way life is now. Blah.
Yeah.
So I felt like there were a couple people in the thread who actually understood locks. Like, there was a really – well, you know what I mean? Like, there is stuff to understand about locks. And, like, Eris Lord is Freedom had a good, like, list of, like, things you need to think about. Little Dawn actually had some citations to other stuff you need to deal with. Like, there's domestic violence if you live with a partner who then has access to how to get into your house. And then you can't lock them out again. Like, that's a huge – problem. At any rate, it was just interesting because I don't, you know, I live in a part of the country where we don't lock the door. Like, you know, it's not a thing I need to deal with. And I grew up in a part of the country where we didn't lock the door. And so I only really locked the door for about 10 years of my life when I live in Seattle. And so locks are a little confusing to me. Like, just in a general sense, I lock myself out of my house a lot of the time. Like, I lock the door at night when I go to bed. But when I'm out and about, I don't. And so I'm always interested in people's lock culture, for lack of a better word. Like, do you lock your car? Do you lock your house? Do you lock your garage and your car and your house? Do you lock your car if it's in your locked garage? Like, it's just interesting to me because it's different. I lock my car when I go to the city. Like, I'm not an idiot. But, like, I clearly think you'd be an idiot to keep your car unlocked in the city, but I don't lock anything here. And other people think that's idiotic. So it's always a good thread to read about other people's cultures that I don't really understand. Speaking of technology questions, which I think that one kind of was, this is a question I didn't really know I had a question about until I read it. And I was like, yeah! So basically it's MCCXX. I don't know my glasses.
Let's see. 1,223. 1223?
Maybe.
Yeah, let's say that.
Great. So essentially, look, I get TV from the cable company. I get internet from the cable company. I can watch as much TV as I can watch, but there's a cap on my internet usage. Why? And, you know, is it like a fakey made-up thing? Is there actually some reason those two streams of content are different? You know, sort of explain to me what the difference is. And again, there's people in the thread talking about – it's a very short thread actually. But there's people in the thread talking about what's actually happening when you're watching Netflix through your cable connection or when you're watching – movies through your cable TV connection. And I enjoyed it. And it kind of made sense. I mean, I have really bad internet, but I don't have any data caps because basically it's so bad I couldn't use enough data.
Yeah.
So I liked reading, you know, internet people geeking about that.
Yeah, that's nice. I've always sort of vaguely wondered about that and never looked into it, so.
Yeah.
I'm walking past Citadel, walking past the circus school, walking past the Turkish baths, walking past.
Did you have anything else to ask me? I only had a couple more.
That's it for me.
Okay. I only had one more and then one Metafilter post I forgot to mention because all the tabs are the same color.
Yep.
This was just a really interesting post from Bleep. It's actually another one of those pronunciation posts. Basically, I know someone whose first name is Tara and who habitually pronounces it with a short A like tap or taxi. So Tara. Almost everyone she meets politely asks if it's Tara or Tara. And so when she tries to explain it's Tara, like taxi, they 100% of the time get a baffled look on their face. And now I don't know what's going on. Is this a difficult vowel sound or what?
Well, so it's Tara?
Well, see, that's the question, right? So the thread turns into a long like, wait a second. Do you mean Tara like taxi? Like that doesn't – that's Tara like Tarragon? Like tack? Like trap? Like Terry? Like Sarah? And so a lot of people are just trying to figure out because it may be that Bleep, who asked the question, themselves has some kind of an accent, which means when they mention – I mean just any – we've all got accents, right? But has some kind of an accent that those words sound specific to them where they didn't to a lot of other Metafilter users. And so the thread, like Aspersion Cast, like comments 11 times, like just excuse me? Like I'm trying to just – you know. It's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of people just trying to work their way around
it.
Bleep gets a little exasperated.
My immediate assumption of what they're trying to convey, like, is making every single one of these, like Flab Dablet says, you know, Tara like Tarragon. And I say Tarragon, so that's no use at all. But I suppose other people may say Tarragon differently in a way that would make, oh man, phonetics are fucked.
Right. And so it's super... You know, people are like, wait, roof doesn't rhyme with hoof? What is happening? And so there's a whole bunch of people.
There are 100+ favorites on an answer that I'm certain is wrong based on my reading.
Yeah.
But it's wrong because, oh, this is fucking.
Right. And Bleep gets a little exasperated, which I think is a completely fair thing to happen. But the thread is really interesting for people. I mean, you know, you and I talk about pronunciation fairly regularly, and it's always. Yep. Interesting, right? Because, you know, it's America. There's a lot of ways to say things.
Yeah, man. This is – I want to come back and look at this thread closer later because it's so difficult. Like that's the thing. Like the IPA, the International Phonetic Alphabet, exists for like some very specific reasons, not least because it's fucking hard to actually capture the distinctions between different subtle vowel shapes when you have to reduce it to comparisons to – just actual like written words. Like the IPA, you can say, no, there's a very specific phonetic aspect to this vowel sound. Your mouth is in a specific position. It's open so far. Your tongue's in a certain place. There's exactly one sound that this is. And different people may pronounce a word using different sounds But like, if we're talking about a specific sound, here is the character used by everyone in the world to denote, like, you know, every linguist in the world, to denote that specific physical phenomenon that we're discussing of making that noise. And it's so hard to do that in plain language. Like, all these analogies
are
like,
anybody who doesn't agree with the – yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and actually, yeah. Now I'm trying to find it. There was an Ask Metafilter thread, and I may need to like poke around on it while you're doing your music minute, which is essentially I'm trying to remember what it is. It has to do with pronouncing. See, all I remember, and maybe we mentioned it last month, but it has to do with like pronouncing words in other languages. And I just remember mentioning in Romanian that there's a word that has a vowel sound that is only different in Romanian. So the two words sound the same to, you know, in American English. But in Romanian, one of the words means blowjob and the other word means lemon.
This rings a bell.
But I...
I have no idea what the context is, but I feel like I have heard this from you in some... It was probably like a malt shop thread somewhere. And,
no, I mean, I talked about it on Ask Metafilter. Oh, what are some sounds?
Oh, okay.
I found it. How nice. So nice. Maybe I mentioned it before, in which case, I'm sorry, I'm on medicine that makes it hard to remember things. But like, what are some sounds that English speakers have difficulty perceiving by Mysticalistical? And... It is a great thread where people talk about that.
Nice.
And, you know, people talk about, like, tonal stuff. And so, yeah, the difference between, like, give a lemon and give a blowjob is a non-difference to English speakers. And so, you know, we would go to the market and try to buy lemons. And you just grab lemons and hand them to the guy. And he'd make you say the word because it always made him laugh because you were saying blowjob. And I was always furious because I'm always furious and just,
That's
but
beautiful.
Yeah, similar thread.
I mean, terrible, but yes.
I know. It's in the past.
That's excellent. No, that's a good crop. That's a good crop of questions there. It turns out this podcast surfaces good quality content.
And I had one thing to circle back to, just very, very quick. But it was a Metafilter post by Filthy Light Thief, which was all about quiz shows and the big fat quiz of the year. And quiz shows are just one of those things we just kind of don't have in the United States in the same way they have in the UK.
Yeah.
And this is, if you're someone who likes quiz shows, this is a great wrap up about quiz shows. Thank you, Filthy Light Thief. It's yet another thread where I showed up, you know, days after the last person commented to be like, hey, I like this.
This is a good shape for like a big roundup post too. Like, I mean, I appreciate weird big posts of all shapes and sizes. I think this variety is the spice of life. But if I was going to like suggest a way to go with like a really functionally useful sort of like, here's a big pile of content, I like this because it's like, hey, here's several shows and brief information about them rather than like, here's 500 episodes of a show. It's like, well, I'm not going to really use a list of 500, but tell me about the show and I can go dig around.
Right. Well, so, and I've been watching the big fat quiz stuff. You know, it's like sometimes you just want to like eat an English muffin and watch something for, you know, 10 minutes before you get on with your day.
Yeah.
And, you know, quiz show content is perfect for that.
Yeah.
You know, Mr. Robot is fucking not, you know.
Yeah. We've been doing that with Terrace House and enjoying that the last
what is that?
Month or two. It's a Japanese reality show.
Wait, Terra Lake Taxi?
Terrace House.
No, seriously, I'm not sure
terrace,
what that word
like,
is.
Like a terrace, like an architectural.
Oh, Terrace House.
Terrace House.
And yeah, Japanese, yeah. Sorry, I'm not making fun. Yeah. I just tried.
No. I understand now. it's a Japanese reality show that's like it's kind of like The Real World except for a lot more chill, and it's like, you know, 20-something, like six 20-something Japanese people living in a house together and just sort of getting to know each other and co-living and a little bit of dating and a little bit of drama depending on what's going on, but not like reality TV drama generally speaking.
Right,
so
not
much
like everybody's crying all the time.
Yeah, it's like, you know, people cry occasionally and, you know, maybe there's the occasional heartbreak and the occasional like house meeting to discuss something. But yeah, it's the same thing. Like, you know, we're totally kind of hooked on it. Like, we're 36 episodes into the season
gosh.
But it's also like each episode's like a half an hour long and like nothing, there's no big dramatic arc or anything. So you can watch 10-15 minutes of it without thinking too hard about it. Like, the only thing is it's Japanese, so you have to be paying enough attention to read subtubtitles. So
yeah, see, that's what I sometimes have trouble with if I like eating.
Yeah.
Like eating TV, depending what I'm eating, sometimes you have to look at your food.
Yeah. But all in all, I've really enjoyed it. It's a nice, chill show.
Neat.
And I believe it's been discussed in an ongoing fashion on Fanfare, too, but we're way behind, so we haven't been keeping up with the current stuff. Would you like a Metafilter Music Minute?
Yeah, although now I can just pay attention because I was going to use that time to look up that post I couldn't remember.
Yeah. And I never find these enough for you to listen to that ahead of time, so we never discussed them. But there are some nice songs that I liked and also some other ones that I'm not going to mention because there's too many, but music is good. One of the things I am going to mention is a little thing called If You Want Me by Carrot Adventure, which I was on board for immediately because the entire description of a fold is vocoden, and I love vocoder. And there is, in fact, vocoden. And it's a nice chill sort of thing. There is a slightly less chill piece of work by Existential Dread called Taps, which is like a noise rock interpretation of the song Taps for a sort of compilation collaboration thing he was getting in on. So it's some aggressive music. There is a nice work in progress from Nika Spark called well, I guess I'm not sure if it's called Big India or Project STEM. I haven't been keeping track enough of, like, the band versus whatever. Anyway, it's nice. She posted a previous thing a while back that was sort of like rough bits of this, and then this is more getting to a developed piece, and I dig it. It's got a nice sort of motoring groove to it. And then there's a very nice little song by Corduroy called Sebastia. I always like the sound of his stuff. He does such a nice sort of
always
layered folky thing.
Well, and I feel like he started Metafilter like as a kid practically.
Yeah.
And now he's like a grown up person. I feel like you and I are like more or less the same age. but for people who started out very obviously as younger people and now seeing them as, you know.
Yeah.
Adult people is cool.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. And then one more, Q-Ben has a song called Damping. That's a nice sort of
what was that, Damping?
Thing. Damping.
Oh, neat.
Damping.
Okay. Yeah.
It's just a nice little electronic thing that sort of grows and builds up a bit over time. And I liked them all. They were all good. Music is good. I dig music. And that's the Metafilter Music Minute. And I can try and transition smoothly into Metatalk with challenge stuff that got mentioned on Metatalk. I mentioned.
Yeah, Greenish talked about that. They got the baby, and now they're back on the plan.
Yeah, I guess I can post the actual challenge threads too.
A
couple of music challenges that Greenish has kicked off. One that's going to go for a couple months, and one that's going to go for several. The shorter term one is A Change Would Do You Good, which is to basically take a song that has some sort of issues and then do a version that gets rid of those issues, like whether it's problematic lyrics or something wrong with the way it was constructed or whatever you think, take a song and change it. And then the bigger scale one is let's all cover a whole bunch of Kate Bush songs, which I've gotten excited about partly because like I just have not listened to Kate Bush ever.
Running
before.
Up that road, running up that hill.
Yeah, I think I might do that one. I think I might do that one because I'm digging that song. I need to listen to that whole album some more.
Hey, hey, oh. I loved Kate Bush when I was. I mean, I still love and appreciate her, but like at the time, just in high school, it was like, whoa, nobody is like this kind of.
Well, see, and I think I got the Tori Amos side of the equation and just never really getting the Kate Bush side of the. So I was a hardcore Tori Amos fan in high school.
Just not my thing. I don't know. I put Tori Amos and like Natalie Merchant in that category where, for whatever reason, they just give me the blah. And I don't know why. Like, they're both great musicians. Who knows
what? Well, I mean, it's just what lands for you. Like, you know, setting aside problems with Morrissey politically. Angela was really big into the Smiths, I think, in high school, and they bounced right off me. And I've come back around and been like, oh, I kind of get this now, you know. Like, they made good enough music, but I just really didn't like the Smiths, like the sound.
Did you read that Metafilter thread that was all about, like, your new title of your Smiths song is
the most recent mild
complaint.
Mildly bad at a restaurant. Yeah. Yes. No, I enjoyed that a great deal. I think I might have mentioned that last podcast, but maybe it had just started, like, by the time.
Well, and last podcast was, you know, we did kind of a sprint and then it was mostly call in.
Yeah. But anyway, yes. So there's a Metatalk post as well as some music talk posts about music challenges. And we'll try and poke on those regularly to get folks involved because I always like it when like we get some new faces or some old faces coming back into music stuff.
Yeah. No, me too.
And yeah, we had all the best post stuff. The best post contest, as we sort of mentioned earlier, was a lot of fun. People made a bunch of stuff. We got first time posters. We got topic specific posts. There's a whole string of meta talk posts. I'll link the final post, since it links back to all the previous ones as well. But if you're looking for some extra stuff that we didn't mention in the podcast, or you just want to see some cool posts, go hit that, because it's a bunch of good stuff and everybody did a great job.
Yeah, congratulations, Boncliff. But I really feel like I was happy. Thank you, mods, for doing the work. I remember that was a pain back when I did it. Thank you, people, for making really good posts. Thank you, other people who sponsored you know, your own kinds of challenges. I feel that's kind of really how you make Metafilter the Metafilter you want to be seeing in the world. So cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice. It's nice that it's got this collaborative feeling to it. I really appreciate that. And we did mention in passing, but I'll mention again, Movable Book Lady passed away right around the beginning of the year, I guess.
Yeah. Rangefinder 1.4 wrote a very beautiful post just for her and about her.
Yeah. And yeah, it sucks that we've lost her, but she was a really great poster, and just sort of like a, you know, went from being a Johnny Come Lately to being a, like, really felt like a permanent fixture on the site in a pretty short
time.
Part
of kind of the new crowd, which is what kind of excites me, is, you know, that you can still have, like, someone who comes to Metafilter after, you know, Metafilter's already been around for 15 years and finds a way to find a place there and add to it and become kind of one of the gang. Like, I feel like there are a lot of people who make critiques that, whatever, Metafilter's kind of insular or whatever the thing is. And, you know, watching people like her find their place really just makes me very happy.
Yeah. And from Fanfare, we had the Super Bowl thread and stuff. People are talking about stuff. Star Trek Discovery is back.
What does that mean?
Star Trek Discovery?
Is that a TV show or a movie?
It's a TV show. It's the new reboot, the new Star Trek. Yeah. Well, it's not a reboot. It's just like a new series that's set approximately original series time or a bit earlier. And yeah, it's good. I'm enjoying it. People are enjoying it. So yeah. And other stuff. There's other stuff on Fanfare too, but I think I'm all out of talk. You got anything else?
No. Right. I, you know, it's just been a good month on Metafilter, I feel like, by and large. And, yeah. You know. The end. Happy taxes, everyone.
Whee! All right. Well, that's an episode then. Good talking to you.
Good talking to you too, as always.
Yeah. Talk to you next month.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.